Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we got Mark and Ian. Hi, I'm Ian.
I'm Mark.
That's Mark. We're going to talk about, from 1976, the racial barrier-breaking triumph that is Silver Streak with Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor, one of their famous team-up movies, their team-up comedy action movies.
Did you look that up? I think they did three.
I know they did See No Evil, Hear No Evil at one point, but that was in, like, I even remember trailers for that movie, so that movie must have been in the mid-90s or early 90s. The gimmick there, one of them was blind and one of them was deaf.
No, it was definitely the 80s, because I can remember watching it way younger than that.
That's weird, I remember the trailer, like, on TV.
Maybe it was coming out on video.
Who knows? We're talking about Silver Streak, though. Bicentennial year, 1976. Big year. Carter. That was it, I guess. We also got McGoohan. McGoohan's in this.
Patrick McGoohan.
Blaine Devereaux. We got Ned Beatty.
Ned Beatty.
Mr. Hand, your favorite, from
Ray.
Fast
Ray,
Times.
Ray Walston.
Something like that, yeah. Ray.
And Joel Clayburgh, or...
It's like, I think it's pronounced Claybore or something like
Claybore.
That. Claybore. Who's 32 in this movie.
32.
Mark thought that she looked like she was in her early 20s or something.
No,
and I was like, no, she's... Oh, you thought she was in her... And I thought she was younger than she looked. Right, so we were both kind of right. You thought she was in her mid-30s?
We can just go with that. That's fine. I think you said you thought she was 27.
Seven. I thought 27. So, Miss Claybore... I thought that you looked very young. You were, in fact, 32, so whatever.
Which makes you how old now? That'd be...
Let's not, you know...
66.
Let's not belabor that. Striving past your own limitations is really what's going on here in Silver Streak, where we have
it
this character.
Like you're forgetting about Clint. Man's got a nose limitations.
Man always has nose limitations, that's true. But we've got the wild man.
Yeah.
Mean Gene Wilder.
The gardener.
Mm-hmm. The editor of gardening books, because he's in publishing. He's taking his, he's taking the Silver Streak train from L.A. to Chicago.
I forgot about Scatman Crothers.
Scatman Crothers. So it's a train, action comedy, mystery, murder, whatever.
Romance. It's
romance, got the Mancini score.
It's got the great Mancini love score.
Yeah, with the strings and all that, and a little harmonica just to kind of mix it up.
The harmonica was the traveling music.
That's true. It was the traveling, not the romance.
The romance was the piano.
A good point, as is always.
It's a nice hole you got there.
Yeah, so...
I think we should delve deeper into the hole.
Oh, this? Oh, I was hanging out outside one night and bored, and I just kept flicking my lighter in my pocket, and eventually it caught up with me. Yeah, I'm a real bad boy. What can I say? Better leave a good-looking corpse.
Something like that.
Except if you're living fast, then chances are you're not going to leave a good-looking corpse, even if you are young.
I can't imagine James Dean was looking too good.
Nah, good point. Too soon.
It's too soon.
It's too soon.
Wasn't that like 57?
What we really got here in Silver Streak is this character of the publisher is going to some convention or some shit in Chicago. It's incidental and doesn't matter. He's supposed to
He's going to his sister's wedding,
that's right. Which sounds like it could be enough of an event thing that they could have worked it into the plot and like had a big crazy sequence at the end with the wedding, but they didn't want to go that way, I guess.
Or the train crashes the wedding, that would have been
Or just, who knows, like, you know, it would have gotten off the train at that point, it would have been like Speed or any of these... Basically,
or
this
Richard Pryor runs off with his sister.
Yeah, sure. Oh, talk about barrier breaking there.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Barrier breaking. Yeah, they didn't. They didn't, but they should have. I mean, and here's my chief complaint with Silver Streak, is it is a movie that doesn't really know what it's trying to do with itself well into the first almost hour, I would say.
It's setting it up.
It does. It's a lot more set up than it needs to be.
Well, it can only set up so much because it's a mystery.
It's sort of, but it's also not, because they kind of just do this huge info dump with him and Ned Beatty when he gets back on the train. Yeah. After he gets knocked off the train, and then all that stuff, that whole first time he's knocked off the train, could have gone, is what I'm saying. It doesn't really do much for the story.
But then he wouldn't have been playing with tits.
He wouldn't have played with the tits, and he wouldn't have had that biplane thing.
That wouldn't have gotten to buzz the sheet.
Yeah, none of that mattered, though, you know what I mean? It didn't even really do much for the character, either. So, I mean, I think this is a movie, and I know I'm going to get a reputation for this, But this is a definite movie that could do with, like, benefit with, like, a remake. I could see someone taking the good parts of this movie and restructuring. And here's the big thing I'm thinking.
I can already imagine how horrible it would be.
Well, it wouldn't be any worse than this already is, which is slowly paced and plotting. And then, like, character motivations are thin. And then by the end, all of a sudden, Gene Wilder has decided that he's, like, a little more brave and a little less whatever that he kind of was at the beginning, a little less timid. Out of nowhere, kind of, and for the love of this woman that he's got no real backstory on, and you don't really know if you should trust at all. Yeah, and then, the biggest, exactly, you know, she's the femme fatale almost. The biggest thing is that, you know, you're waiting. You're like, where's my Gene Pryor? My Gene Pryor? Where's my Richard Pryor here? Where's my Richard? And he shows up like 60% of the way into the movie. He isn't even in it at all. And then he's just like his buddy, and he's his friend, and he's helpful to him. And there's no good reason for why he would do any of that.
It's the 70s.
And, you know, brotherly love, I guess. Yeah. Whatever. You know, you look out for your own or something. But, I don't know. These are some of the minor problems that I had with the film.
Just minor problems.
They're major problems, but they're why I think it could be done in a better way.
No, it really couldn't.
You like that tedious scene at the beginning where he's talking to Joe Claybor and it's just like talking and
yes,
it's just,
I do.
It's so plotting and it's so like,
the beginning of the movie was the romance.
Yeah, but it wasn't even that romantic. It just didn't make any. It felt weird. It didn't make any sense. It was just like, why did she decide to, you know, get all going good with him? I guess it was what Ned Beatty said. He was right about them women on the trains.
The motion.
I guess the motion of the ocean was, you know, rolling in the right way there. I don't know, it seemed forced in and ham-fisted and kind of unnecessary, or at least it just wasn't done. The execution of the parts in this movie were not that well done, and if they'd been done in a different way, and the structure had been retrofitted in a different way, then I would have enjoyed it a lot more. Instead, I think I found it to be a little tedious in some places, and kind of slow. But I did enjoy elements of it. I mean, you know, it had the train, which I always love trains. I mean, even though it's a 70s train, it's not sleek and swanky. It's kind of disgusting and Harvest Gold. But it's still a train, and trains are just a cool setting for any kind of a mystery or a murder or action or anything else. And there was a good bit of ghost walking, which is always nice.
That was good.
And
Jaws. Give a shot with a harpoon gun.
Yeah, exactly. Jaws got pooned. And I don't know, and then the action sequence at the end with like a shootout, and then it got like all... like that exciting.
It was a little
out of place, but I'm just
with
saying
the
that,
bubble helicopter though.
Yeah, the bubble helicopter. All these things like could have still worked and could have worked better in this movie than they did. And I think it's a case of something being like 70% of what it could have been, and that's just too bad. And that's why I say it could do handle with the remake if it were done right. And whenever I say that, I mean if it were done right. I don't mean, you know,
Pelham 1-2-3.
Pelham 1-2-3 remake is terrible. Not terrible, 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 but it just compared to the original.
How many great remakes have there been?
I don't know if there's been too many great remakes, but I mean...
Name one.
The thing is, they're trying to remake good movies instead of taking movies that are kind of mediocre and trying to make them better.
You can't do it, can you?
No, I'm trying to think. I mean, I don't really... I'm not a huge remake fan, but I could... Okay, The Thing.
The Thing, okay.
John Carpenter's The Thing is better than the original one.
Which was pretty much... They really changed the story.
They changed a decent bit of it. It was still a bunch of dudes in an ice station with like a monster.
But that's also great. The tension.
Oh yeah.
There was a great X-Files.
Yeah.
There was a total play on that.
Sort of. Yeah. It had to do with the people's like aggression centers and stuff.
Well, I mean, the whole idea because of the tension.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's infected and who's not.
Who's not, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Even if you just talk about, like, a train murder mystery, like, suspense thriller kind of thing, which is this movie has a lot of elements of, because it's not really that funny. I can see it where it's trying to be funny in places, and I could give it a pass to a degree because it was, like, a different era, maybe. And so what was, you know, like, that would be funny. That would have gotten a laugh. In 1976, and now it's just kind of like, oh, you know, whatever, or not even seen as funny. But I'm saying, even ostensibly...
So is Spike Lee going to remake it?
Yeah, Spike Lee should totally remake the Silver Streak. I think it'd be awesome if he did. But, or Tony Scott. No.
Can Wesley Snipes play Richard Pryor?
No.
No.
I don't know who would play Richard Pryor.
I
might switch the roles, actually. I might do the whole, like, you know, not switch the roles
Chris
so
Rock.
Much. As like have the straight man be, you know, the guy that's like would be the Richard Pryor character or something. I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to talk about my ideas for the remake for Silver Streak so much as, but you brought up an interesting point about remakes or execution. I mean, I remember, and I haven't seen it in years, and maybe it's not that good of a movie, but isn't there one with Gene Hackman where there's a train and he's trying to keep protect a woman that's a witness? I forget her name. She was Jack Ryan's wife in some of those Tom
Clancy. Ann Archer.
Ann Archer, yeah. And I remember that one being a pretty good movie, a pretty good suspense thriller. It's not a comedy, so it's not fair to compare
I remember that movie, but I can't remember the name.
It's not fair to necessarily compare the two, but I mean, if you're talking about, like, on a train, action suspense elements, then yeah, then I think it's fair to compare to a degree. The problems with Silver Streak is that it doesn't really know what kind of movie it's trying to be. It does have that bit of a romance. Then it just gets kind of plodding. I mean, really, that whole first time...
Could Ben Stiller be the bad guy?
That whole first time he gets thrown off the train, just...
Do you keep harping on that? Well,
because it...
That ground's been covered.
The more I thought about it, the more I think it's
blanketed.
Just...
Blanketed.
It's just like... Why not introduce Richard Pryor? Why not introduce Richard Pryor in that first section then? That would have made more sense. You needed more time with him to develop the relationship between him and Gene Wilder, I think. It would have been more funny, too, because you would have had more chances for comedy. Because let's face it, that's Richard Pryor brought most of the comedy to the movie. Gene Wilder is a comedian as well, but he generally is sort of a straight guy or a very weird guy, like in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where he's just a very strange fellow.
He definitely played a wide array of roles.
Yeah, and in this he's more, I would say, kind of just a regular guy, kind of almost milquetoast, sort of, for the good portion of the movie, though he does kind of have these moments where he becomes an action star, you know, poon and Jaws and hanging off trains and
deputized.
Stuff. He gets fedutized inexplicably at the end, and it, I mean,
which is pretty cool.
Those are things that just, I mean, if the movie were just
you didn't even bring up the best part with the assistant controller or whatever the hell he is.
Assistant controller? You mean on the train?
Uh-huh. No, the guy in the booth. He's looking for his boss. Didn't believe the train was a runaway.
Oh, yeah, with Fred Willard. Fred Willard had to go slap around the waitress to find
out. He was on some TV shows.
Fred Willard's been in everything, pretty much, at this point.
Everything?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Elements of Silver Streak work, but it's...
But it's a steaming pile.
No, it takes too much time to get into, like, the comedy
basically,
stuff.
If you don't dig movies from the 70s, don't bother.
It's not even... There's nothing explicable... necessarily 70s-ish about it, because I would probably have liked that if it were more like that. But... You know, if it had turned into more of a road trip thing and he had not got back on the train so quickly so that then they could do all this info dump stuff with the Ned Beatty character and everything. I mean, they had that problem they needed to solve, and I'm saying that they could have done it in a more creative, clever way to set up this whole, why is all of this crazy shenanigans happening with this guy being killed and this, you know, this complicated, convoluted scenario where this art dealer that doesn't want his stuff to be discredited, so that means he resorts to... murder with, you know, henchmen and goons and everything else. I don't know. I would give Silver Streak... I want to give it more than a 2.5, but I don't quite want to give it a 3. But I think I'll give it a 3 just for the train and for whatever else. Well, like I said, I mean, you know, I liked a lot of elements of it. I just think, as a whole, it didn't necessarily work to make it a great movie. Like, it would
I'm not going to call it a great movie.
If all the parts had worked...
It's a fun Saturday afternoon.
But that's what I'm saying. If it were more fun, I would have given it a 4 easily if it were just better put together. I mean, almost, honestly, like, if you could just removed some scenes... and added one or two more and rearranged some stuff. It tries to be too much. It bites off more than it can. Because if you think about it, try to think of the genres it's trying to be. Like you said, it's got that element of romance, then it's got that element of almost like a Hitchcock suspense movie to a degree. And then it kind of takes a break
from... The body hanging out the window is definitely Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah, and then it takes a break from all of that while, you know, it's just him wandering around. And then that doesn't turn into anything all that funny. Or really much in the way of a road trip movie or anything.
I thought the sheriff was funny.
Well, that was the second time with the sheriff. That had a little bit of humor to it, but it added that extra level of like, oh, he's being chased by other people now and everything else. I mean, really, which I guess it was just set up there just to make that scene, the seminal, you know, triumph scene of race relations where Richard Pryor tries to teach Gene Wilder how to seem more hip. You know?
Give him rhythm.
Give him rhythm and all that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. like I said, I could see it being a fun, like I said, that's what I was thinking about as I was thinking about how to rate it. And I was like, yeah, it's fun, but it is kind of
a 2. You won't be able to
kind of fast. No, I'll give it a 3 for sure, because it's got what it's got in it, and it, you
know, got what it's got.
And I mean, that's 3 out of 5, so that's not the best rating in the world. You know, it's not that great.
No.
Would you you more of a 4 guy on this one, or
no? I would have given it honestly a 3.
A 3. So you're more optimistic. You see the good parts, and then, but I mean, do you see what I mean about?
It's because there's nothing in this movie that drives me nuts. Certain movies. There's nothing pretentious about this movie. I'm not going to grade it really hard. It's not trying to be, in my opinion, it's not trying to be anything other than what it is.
But I think it doesn't really know what it's trying to be. For a lot of it, and that's why it's got those places where it's, like, slow and where it's...
It's the way movies used to be.
Not sure. Well, I understand. It's the way movies sometimes still are. You're right, in places. But those slow parts are usually giving you... little things about character, or they're giving you more in the way of plot element, and that whole conversation with him and the woman was like maybe trying to be funny, but it was also just kind of, it was just kind of tedious and sort of unrealistic. It felt the performances weren't that great at that point either. I think, I mean, this Hiller guy, I don't think ended up directing anything too amazing. Who knows, watch IMDb him and find out that he did something crazy good that everyone's seen.
He
but
probably did,
probably did, but
he probably got 5 gold under his belt.
Probably. Or some silver.
What's silver?
I don't know. Less than gold. That's what they paid Judas, right?
Judas, silver.
There you go. Read your Bible, Mark.
Do you read your Bible, Ian?
I read parts of it.
That's good.
Just the good parts.
The good parts.
I don't know. Anyway, that's Silver Streak, the Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder, Patrick McGowan, 1976 classic train suspense comedy, I guess.
Yep.
And so remember, check out the old Futile podcast at the website. That's graniteseed.com/futilepodcast. Search us on iTunes, Futile Podcast. Write us a review, give us a rating.
Don't review this one.
Hey, review whatever, man. This is the kind of podcast we do. What's wrong with this one? We weren't eating donuts through this entire one.
Were we eating donuts?
No, over the top one, we were eating donuts during Over the Top.
Well, you were eating donuts.
Well, I get you. You don't eat donuts over there.
Not when I'm talking.
Uh-huh.
I was eating probably a quesadilla or something. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I was getting drunk. What was it, like 5 in the morning?
It was like 5 in the morning. No, it wasn't 5 in the morning.
Time to watch Over the Top.
We were watching Over the Top at like 1
in the afternoon.
1 in the afternoon. Yes, Robert Loggia is the dad. Remember we even made that joke from Lost Highway?
From Lost Highway.
Yeah, you know, because Robert Loggia was in it, where he's like, you like porno, don't you? Get your dick hard.
Man, I remember watching that.
Lost Highway was
up
good
in
stuff.
Your room.
Yeah, you passed out right around that part, right after that.
I just remember, like, trying to run somebody off the road.
Yeah, that was a crazy movie. Lost Highway was good stuff. I enjoyed it. Great soundtrack.
With his orange juice.
I get my hipster cred because I got that on vinyl. Lost Highway soundtrack. David Lynch soundtrack on vinyl.
I think I have that on... I think I have that soundtrack or that... Yeah.
Why would you have... Because Reznor did it and you were all into that back then or something?
I don't know.
Strange.